time, good life, good home, good job, good wife. You're right on time for a bad movie night. You've had a shitty day, shitty job, no life, broken home, born alone, no wife.
Welcome to the Bad Movie Night Podcast. I'm Aaron Vaccaro. Is that better? Is that was a lot of luck.
It's a solid
right?
start.
Yeah.
And with me as always,
Jeff.
Nosley, hi.
Hi.
Hi there.
So,
hi everybody.
How's everybody doing? Good?
Good.
Yeah. Good.
Meeting on a Sunday. It's kind of nice.
Afternoon.
It's nice. Got football on in the background.
Relaxing.
So we have a show that is dedicated to the one, the only, thank God the only.
Seriously.
Uwe Boll. You will learn more about him as we go on. We're going to be taking a look at his career in the IMDb That Shit Bro segment. We'll also be looking at a trailer for a new movie by Uwe Boll entitled Morningstar, which actually he only produced. He did not write and direct it, but
still.
He didn't want to spread his genius still. All
yeah.
over that film.
There's only a limited supply for him, and apparently he's...
There is. And, you know, he's a very desired man. I mean, he's a very desired artist in this realm. So, and then we're... that's going to be in our trailer trash segment, and then we're going to be reviewing...
Blubberella. The worst.
It's as bad. No. It's much worse than its title.
Yeah.
It's the most offensive and worst film I think we've ever seen.
Absolutely. So we are going to be doing that, and then we'll end with the Wheel of Misfortune to see what we will be reviewing next time. But if you want to contact us, there are several ways you can do it. You can email us at podcast@badmovienight.com. That's NITE.com. You can follow us on Twitter at badmovienight.com, all one word. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/badmovienightcom. All right, so first things first. Anyone seen anyone seen any bad movies recently?
Yes.
Besides the ones we have to review?
Yes, I do. I do have one on the top of the list.
Ooh.
Came across my streaming Netflix, and I was watching it at lunch at work, as I do on my breaks.
Right.
Michael Crichton's Timeline.
Hmm.
Oh, never saw it.
Have you read the book?
No.
Good book.
Read the book.
It was a good
I'm
book,
a
and I remember.
Crichton fan in general.
All that needs to be said is Paul Walker, and then.
Oh, I remember when this movie came out.
Yeah, it's got. Let me actually. It's
was this a straight to video?
No,
it was not.
No, it was.
No, it
was in the theaters.
Yeah.
It's got Gerard Butler, Billy Connolly, Ethan Embry's in it, which I always enjoy.
Oh, Ethan Embry.
I'm an Ethan Embry fan. He's playing a scientist. Go fig, you know?
He has the scientist look.
He really had to stretch himself for that.
Indeed.
But it's quite a terrible movie. And it's bad, but it's worse because Paul Walker is so bad. Billy Connolly is his father, by the way. And he's the Scott.
What?
Yeah.
Random.
And it's kind of like set up where it's his father, but obviously they live in separate parts of the world. He's grown up not seeing him.
Okay.
But. I don't buy it. I never did. And I can't remember the book well enough to know. I don't think that's how it's established in the book. I actually kind of want to reread the book because it was so good. But
that's a shame with Michael. We've had this discussion before, I feel
with
like.
Yeah, we have.
With Michael Crichton movies where like they're so hit and miss.
Yeah.
The books are always good. The movies, just everyone thinks like, oh, this is such a great plot. Like, I'm going to make it into a great movie. And it's like, no.
That happens with Stephen King, I feel like, too.
Yeah.
I don't understand you guys. You all live in the past.
What?
You know what the past is to me?
What? What's the past to you?
The past is why my parents split up. The past is basically what I've been force-fed ever since I was a little kid. I mean, none of you archaeologists looks to the future.
What are you talking about? I mean, what is the future but just more of the same, you know? More bloody gadgets, more machines like that thing you rode up on. It's the past is where it's at. You know, I mean, you know, people then, they cared about each other, the men had honor, you know?
No. You see, you know what that is to me?
What?
It's just more of that romantic warrior crap.
Romantic? You want to see romantic? Follow me.
Yeah.
Langoliers? Has anyone seen
The
Langoliers?
I've seen
What's
the
that?
TV
Holy
movie with Bronson
Pinchot. That's it. That's the only one.
What?
Yeah.
It's the one and only. It's terrible.
I don't know. I was a kid and I liked it. I remembered that the bad guys in it looked like the Chompers from Mario Brothers.
Yes.
Okay. So then, yeah, it's bad
it
probably.
It is bar none the worst CGI I've ever seen in a movie.
Oh, my
it's
gosh.
These, It looks like somebody made it like a, you know, an ITT tech and like it was like, you know, like video arts class or something. Yeah,
it's like
the, snakes the, on a train, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's a long, it's on par with
it's
that.
It's like Lawnmower
sure.
Man bad. Like yes. that like that really polygon PlayStation 1 shit.
They just are filming a video game basically and then just, coming back. Fuck.
That we didn't cross the gap enough.
It's called Langoliers or Wrangoliers?
Langoliers.
Langoliers.
It's a great premise.
The premise is great, yeah. Because they eat holes in like the fabric of time.
Basically they get caught in a rift of time. They're on a plane.
Who's they? The people?
The people on the flight. Oh. And they land. Don't they? Like, oh, they,
yes. They eventually land, but the whole world's different.
The whole world's not there. Like, nobody's there.
Yeah, nobody's there. Oh. All the people are gone.
And they find that they are roughly, like, several minutes behind in the universe. So they have to just wait. Like, I forget what happened. But then all of a sudden, they're just like, and people
it's just
appeared.
Them standing around it for 2 hours.
It gets pretty captivating. They're just sitting there like, well, something should happen soon.
Just count down. But they're the Langoliers eat the time. They said that they're the eaters of time before you.
Here, let's get official.
Okay, it
says, according to IMDb, it says, most of the passengers on an airplane disappear, and the remainder land the plane in a mysteriously barren airport.
Ah.
So that wasn't very much more helpful at all, actually.
No, okay, that's right, yeah, because they just wake up and half the flight is gone.
Yes, yes. Oh. So and they have no idea where. And then they arrive at that airport. Nobody's around.
Yeah.
And
then they really do wait. I remember it happened. They're all like, we just have to wait.
And you're like, it's just like as a shot of a clock going like, gunk.
And then literally people appear and you're like, well, fuck, man. That's all you had to do? I was taking a nap. I don't know.
I was going to go get some food from the food court at this airport. And
there's nobody here.
Anyone, anyone that's borrowed?
And the only real threat during that waiting period are these super polygon-esque computerized chompers.
And Bronson Pinchot.
Yeah.
Remember him ripping paper. That was his like way to deal with the...
Was it like an analogy to like ripping in time?
Oh, shit. I don't know. I just know that's how he dealt with stress. So he was just sitting there ripping paper all through the movie. And I'm like...
Yeah, it was like a nervous tick thing, right? And he just sit there like tearing paper. And then someone just fucking loses it eventually. And I'm like, stop tearing the paper! It's like there's always that person.
For God's sakes.
Wait, how did we get onto the Langoliers?
Because I was talking about timeline and bad adaptations. Right. Good books.
Doesn't matter.
All right. So, yeah, it's on streaming Netflix.
It is. It kind of makes me want to get back and read more Michael Crichton novels, which I think that might have been the last Michael Crichton novel I read. I didn't read Prey or Micro, which I heard were supposed to be
books. Oh, yeah, I haven't read any of the recent ones. The another one, good book, bad adaptation, was Sphere.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, but I remember when that movie came out. It looked terrible.
It was so boring.
Yeah.
The book was really interesting.
Well, that's the thing. He all of his novels obviously hinge on such scientific detail,
right?
And honestly, you get a movie, it's 2 hours, and they have to find a great way to condense it.
Yeah,
I think that only like Jurassic Park was like the easiest way to swallow it with the dino DNA, and you were like, you're like, he can't do a little animated DNA dude in every movie. Although he probably should.
Hey, don't you disparage Mr. DNA like that? God damn it!
Yeah, I mean, that was the only way to do it, and for us to accept it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Nasli, have you get a chance to see anything?
I have not, although I did go see a play. That I did not think
was
good. Well, I went with my mom.
It better be the worst play ever.
It was a Vita.
It better be Blubberella the Musical.
A Vita.
That was a musical.
It was a musical. Uh-huh. Well, a play, a musical. I went with my mom.
Why didn't you just watch the movie with Madonna?
Well, that's ridiculous. Fan of the movie, and that's why my mom and I wanted to go, because we are fans of the movie. And it was bad.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the...
Wait, what kind of production
was
this?
Was it a big production?
It was at the Pantages.
Oh, that's a big production.
So it's a relatively big production, but here's the thing. I'm not a big musical...
By the way, computers everywhere across the world that are listening to this podcast, just shut off.
Just shut off.
Just so we all know. Just so we're all aware. The six that were listening to this, now that we started talking about
musicals...
No.
I'm going
to
bring it into movies because I'm going to tie it in. Don't worry. I got it. But I'm not a big fan of plays. I'm not a big fan of like theatrical overdoing it because you're on the stage.
That sounds
kind
more
of
like
shit.
Musicals to me. Plays are...
Plays, yeah, you know what? That's fair. I haven't seen that many plays.
I've seen... Oh, this is getting so... Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen are doing Waiting for Godot on Broadway right now.
Get the friends.
That would be pretty fucking amazing to see those two guys go, you know, not going at it. That's a wrong choice.
No.
I would want
going
them
at
too.
It.
Okay, all right, let's own it. Stick with it.
Just let
old
it happen.
Gentlemanly Sir English Love.
Yes.
I would love it. They're friends anyway. They're like, they post pictures all the time of them being friends.
Did anybody see the picture of Patrick Stewart in the lobster costume in the bathroom?
Oh, no.
He posted it on Halloween.
Oh, my gosh.
treat yourself.
Oh, no, 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 I have.
It's amazing. He's sitting in the bathtub on his back with his little pictures out, just like looking like terrified into the camera.
He's
it's pretty amazing.
Crazy. But anyway, I'm a big fan of adaptations of like musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Like I liked Evita, I liked Chicago. I liked Grease, you know, those kinds of things.
Yes.
But just seeing it live is terrible. People are awful in audiences. I don't understand what has happened where no one, and this relates to movies too, where one realizes that you are surrounded by other people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people so were talking. People were
on
like.
Cell phone, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, people were just talking.
Yeah.
And they did that at the Tim Burton concert I went to as well, where people were just straight up having a conversation at the volume that you and I are talking right now.
Delightful.
This lady, the second the play started, my poor mom was sitting next to her, and she kept just sniffling, like, every fucking, like, 3 seconds.
Oh, my God. That's,
like,
that can be so
obnoxious. So wish I had a tissue so I could just be like, here, lady, it sounds like you fucking need this.
Yeah,
and just
yeah.
made her, like, shamed.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah.
Shamed
play,
her.
Play musicals, not a big fan. Musical movies, I'm a fan of. I know that makes me a pariah amongst, like, the gay community and, like, the... women who love plays who are probably in their 40s and like that's all they do.
Women.
So neither one of our demographics, so I'm not offending really anybody. But
it's a WHLP.
So you're basically breaking our mom's heart is what you're saying.
Yes, our moms.
Fair enough.
We go because of our moms. That's basically the point.
I make a habit of just breaking my mom's heart on a repeated basis these days. So yeah, I'm with you.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Be a man. Yeah. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to do that. I haven't seen a new movie, but I for Halloween, for our Bad Movie Night screening where we showed Leprechaun in the Hood, I dressed up as the hobo from Hobo with a Shotgun, so I got to revisit that movie, I think for the third time now.
Oh, boy.
And I love that movie so much. It's so ridiculous, but it's so much fun, and it's actually, like, really, could be really disturbing in points, but it's it's so over the top that... It doesn't bother me.
It's like cartoon violence.
Yeah, exactly.
It's basically so crazy that you can't really be like, oh my God, what if this really happened in real life? Because it wouldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so let's delve into Uwe.
Okay.
Sometimes pronounced Yui, but correctly pronounced Uwe Boll.
I think I just want to call him Yui, because Uwe just makes him sound even more like a dick.
Yui. Hey, Yui. For those who don't know who Uwe Boll is, he is considered by many to be the... And this is a knock against Ed Wood, but he's considered to be the Ed Wood of the 21st century.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I would hope Ed Wood is spinning in his grave at hearing that, so...
I mean, in all fairness, I think Ed Wood has been glorified because of Tim Burton's movie and Johnny Depp's performance, but... I'm sure at the time, like, people were like, what the fuck is this guy about?
Yeah. I'm sure. I mean, to me... An Ed Wood movie is
so much more
hundreds of times
to watch.
More watchable any Uwe Boll movie.
I don't think anyone looks upon a Uwe Boll movie with like envy or like a nostalgic feeling or like a
say 50 years from now if they go watch a Uwe Boll movie, no one's gonna be like, oh, this is a novelty, like this is like it's good bad, it's not good.
No campy fun to it. Like the Ed Wood movies had some campiness that was fun to them, but these are just. They're just awful.
Yeah.
They're
not
just
funny. Trying too hard.
The worst is when he tries to do comedy.
Oh, like this, like
Blubberella,
we'll get into it. But oh my God, it's so bad.
It's atrocious. So, yeah. So the man is, he was born in 1965. So that would make him what? Old? 58?
58?
50. Yeah, time to retire is what it would make him, I think. So yeah, it would make him 48, I believe. I think that is correct. He's a German director, also a producer, screenwriter, and he's kind of known in the film industry, the in quotes, film industry, as the guy who kind of makes the video game adaptation. It's like Paul W.S. Anderson and Uwe Boll are the ones who basically make video game adaptation movies. So he's done everything from Blood Rain to Postal to House of the Dead. To
Dungeon Siege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he doesn't have very many original thoughts of his own, but he thinks like, oh, video games are popular, I'm going to adapt those into a movie and make lots of money.
And then we go disco.
And now I'm Russian. I don't know why. I can't do...
The Germans,
yes. But for some reason, Uwe Boll still manages to get good actors in his movies.
How is that possible?
Not all of them, but, I mean, he's gotten the likes of... Oscar winner Ben Kingsley.
Mm-hmm. Although Ben Kingsley's done some...
Kingsley's done some shit.
Yeah. But still. Right. He's still an Oscar winner. You would think he's still better than doing an Uwe Boll movie. He's had Ray Liotta in movies. He's had Jason Statham. Michael Madsen. That's kind of a buy. I wouldn't say he's really... Because the Wikipedia article says for getting famous actors in his movies. Michael Madsen had his like 2-year run during Reservoir Dogs.
That was Blood Rain, right? Where he was in and he was...
Well, he kind of made a comeback with the Kill Bill movies. He was sweaty fest, but not really.
Yeah, no. It was kind of more Quentin Tarantino. Like yeah. So... Where to begin talking about Uwe Boll? Well, let's go down. So this is our IMDb That Shit Bro segment where we kind of go through the filmmaker or actor or what have you's IMDb and look at their more notable achievements?
Question mark?
Things he's done, let's just say that.
Things he's done.
I don't think they're achievements.
So, sadly, Uwe Boll has 43 producing credits.
And quite a number of them that are still in production.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of Uwe Boll to come. Yeah.
I can honestly say Blubberella is the only Uwe Boll film I watched all the way through.
Really?
Yep.
Because you had to.
I had to.
For the purposes of this podcast.
Yeah. Otherwise, exactly. I wouldn't
I'll
do
tell
it.
You what. I watched would have shut Blubberella off
me
10
too.
Minutes in.
That was
I remember
veto
I watched
of all vetoes.
Most of Blood Rain, and then I think the only real movie of his I've really seen was In the Name of the King. Was the Dungeon Siege tale. I watched most of the, I think I watched all of that.
I've not seen that one.
It looks like there's an In the Name of the King
I just remember
there
is. I just remember Matthew Lillard in a Dungeon Siege tale like trying to act with like a Shakespearean type accent.
Oh,
it was something really bad. He was
That's always a good idea.
Yeah, I was like Matthew Lillard just stick to she's all that.
Just
stop
shut
it.
Up. Yeah. Just stop it.
Just stop it.
I believe in the Dungeon Siege sequel, Dolph Lundgren stars.
That would be correct.
Yeah.
And then they were working on the third one, which has just been completed.
Ah, so good. More Dungeon Siege to
which
come.
Which I don't know if Dolph Lundgren is back for that. Nope. It looks like Dominic Purcell has taken over.
That's his kind of new flavor
that's
of the week.
That's his new dude. That's his new bro, because I think he's in the second one.
And he was in the Assault on Wall Street movie that came out earlier this year.
Who's Dominic Purcell? I'm looking.
He's Prison Break.
Yeah, did you watch Prison Break?
Oh no, but I just saw his face.
He was the brother.
Yeah.
So all right. So what are some other? Okay. So back in 2011, 2010, you know what I'm thinking? Actually, Jeff brought up a good point that he made. Uwe Boll made Blood Rain: The Third Reich, which was the third Blood Rain movie.
Yes.
And he made a movie called Auschwitz and a movie called Blubberella.
Right.
Bless you. That are all centered around Nazis and World War II.
I was just about to say, yeah.
So Jeff mentioned that he made Blubberella and Blood Rain the Third Reich at the same time. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he made all three at the same time.
Well, wow. When you got a lot of B-roll, you just...
We got that B-roll.
You make your editors just work for the next 3 weeks and you try to make a movie out of it. And something will come out.
Yeah, it's
something.
They just spliced a bunch of shit together mm-hmm. and they called it a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Uwe Boll is most certainly a quantity over quality type of filmmaker. None of his movies have, although movies of his did start with high budgets. Now they're not so high because everything's direct to DVD or Blu-ray or whatever. But it did start out that his movies were theatrical releases.
Correct.
The first In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Tale was released in theaters.
Blood Rain was too.
As was Blood Rain. Yeah. And In the Name of the King was made for $60 million, which at that time was a lot of money. And it made $10 million worldwide at the box office. Blood Rain was made for $25 million and made $2.42 million at the box office. So Uwe Boll was no longer going to be directing any big budget theatrical release movies. So then he kind of found his niche in the direct-to-video market. And he's been torturing us ever since with those. So
ridiculous.
Some other titles of his. Has anyone seen Rampage?
I've never seen any Uwe Boll movie. I feel
really?
Like other
this is
than
your first one?
This is my first one.
You didn't see Postal with us when we watched
it
for Bad
No, you guys
movie
watched
night?
It. I think I was
Holy
gone.
Shit.
Now was Rampage based on the Nintendo game?
No.
Then I'm
no,
not
I
watching.
Wish.
It. That would be fantastic.
Not interesting.
No, Rampage is
this is on streaming Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've seen this. Pop
Rampage
up.
Is actually considered.
6.2.
Yeah, Uwe Boll's best movie, one of his best movies, if not his best movie by people.
Really?
Oh,
like, quality-wise?
Michael Paré popping up again in that.
Oh, who's he?
He's Sheriff Melvoy.
No, but who is he in...
He's Commandant.
Oh, yeah.
He's Eddie from Eddie and the Cruisers, for those of you that don't know.
Well, this first guy, which is one of my personal favorites. Brendan Fletcher, he was in he was in Blubberella, too.
Yeah, he was also... like
the love interest or whatever.
He was also in Freddy vs. Jason.
Oh, he was?
Ah, that's where that dude looks from. Dang.
He's one of the inmates in the asylum. So Rampage is basically about a guy who...
with a thirst for revenge, builds a full body armor from Kevlar and goes on a killing spree.
I mean, that's the what happened in North Hollywood, isn't it? Isn't that basically what he took the idea from?
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, and now, and now, you know, obviously all these shootings are happening all over the place.
I guess it's too soon.
It's his fault. It's all Uwe Boll's fault.
Yeah, you know what? I think we're onto something here. I think Uwe Boll is responsible for every person who's picked up a gun and gone into a place and shot people.
Since 2009.
Since 2009, which has been
quite a number,
the majority of
unfortunately.
Them.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, sadly.
Thanks a lot, Uwe Boll.
Yeah. So one more reason to hate Uwe.
And I do hate him.
Yeah.
You should.
As you should. There was one movie that did strike me on his IMDb that I was very curious about, called 1968 Tunnel Rats.
What? Oh, uh-huh.
It was just such a bizarre title. Oh, no, it's not
that. Was it the behind-the-scenes thing he did?
Let's see. During the Vietnam War, a special U.S. combat unit sent out to hunt and kill the Viet Cong soldiers in a man-to-man combat in the endless tunnels underneath the jungle of Vietnam. Suicide squads of a special kind. Oh, that doesn't.
You actually think
you
were
thinking I was
Tunnel Rats?
I was thinking it was a period piece movie about tunnel rats. So silly me.
how those rats got into those sewers in the first place?
Those silly rats.
Yeah, it was. You had an origin tale.
It's a docudrama.
Well, that's a bummer.
We should make that movie, though.
Yeah, we should.
Trademarked, copyrighted.
All right, so then there's Postal, which was also a big Uwe Boll movie. It came out in 2007. Grossly offensive, much in the way that Blubberella is. But it is basically about... it's based on a video game as well. And it's basically about terrorists coming into the U.S. and a guy going
around. The game was of great controversy.
Yeah, it was extremely violent, yeah. And the movie's awful. It's
wait, what is this description I'm reading of Postal? Is this what the video game is based off of? In the ironically named City of Paradise, a recently laid-off loser teams up with his cult-leading uncle to steal a peculiar bounty of riches from their local amusement park. There's more. Somehow, the recently arrived Taliban have a similar focus, but a far more sinister intent.
Well, I will say the video game does include. It is about a guy recently laid off who goes on like a shooting spree.
Okay,
but
is the Taliban involved in the video game? That's all I need to know.
Because I think didn't the original Postal game come out before
9/11? Oh my god,
Postal's it came out in when was.
There is a picture.
Yeah, it came out in 2003.
Of fake George W. Bush and a fake Osama bin Laden frolicking.
Yeah, that's the cover. That's the poster cover too, but with an atomic bomb blast going off in the background.
Oh my gosh!
The only thing that I can remember about this movie, and I wish I didn't, is Dave Foley's cock.
What?
Yeah, he does full frontal in this movie.
Ew.
And it's really disturbing.
Does he have a tiny penis?
It's a tiny penis.
Aww,
and
gross.
It's yeah,
sad. Yeah, he's got a little dick. Little Canadian dick.
Does it talk? Does it split
there was so much hatred behind that, like under his brother, like, a little Canadian.
But you can make the light. Hey! You can make the light! Come on, bitch! God damn, she could have made the fucking light.
She forgot her glass.
You say glass?
Yes.
You say glass, you Frankfurt-eating motherfucker? I bought all these goddamn English CDs for you to say fucking glass? It's glasses! You fucking foreigners come over here and you fuck up the language, and this bitch is fucking up the traffic!
Come down, glass.
You fucking calm down. This flat-ass bitch comes over here, she takes over the convenience stores, and they eat up all our goddamn dogs.
Go and help her. Come on.
You're right. I'm tripping. Just get the car and make sure she's doing okay. She's an old lady. Ugh. I feel bad now.
Hi.
Hey,
the light is green. The light is green. You could have went through the light.
Yeah.
What'd you say, bitch?
over there. Thanks, call me nigger.
So for the postal game, this is what Wikipedia says. I don't know what – it's strange. It's almost as referring to something else, but it says, there is no plot as such. The presence of a moving van on the first level suggests that the postal dude has been evicted from his home and is therefore, quote-unquote, going postal. But no background story evolves during the game. However, the manual hints at a possible backstory. The postal dude believes the town's population has been infected by a madness plague. And in between levels, players are given a chance to delve into the postal dude's psychosis with ominous diary entries containing phrases like, the earth is hungry, its heart throbs and demands cleansing, the earth is also thirsty. So this is about a dude going fucking insane.
Yeah.
That's the long and short of it. Sometimes
so
it's all
so
you
it
need.
Basically has as much story as most Uwe Boll movies.
This is the game, so the
right,
like they
right.
they but really
the
wanted to...
The movie, they actually tried to add story to
they
it.
They were like, let's just toss a lot of shit in here.
But let's make it as convoluted as humanly possible.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
We had like four ideas for four different movies, but let's just throw it all into one.
Well, at least he didn't make two separate movies, like Postal and then like The Mailman or something, and it's just like...
Yeah.
Did,
like Kevin Costner or some shit.
Yeah.
Our,
Oh, that was a Postman.
Also very bad. Did were you guys aware that in 2006, Uwe Boll got into a boxing match with his critics?
Yes, I do remember that.
Yes, or he challenged them. Did he actually get into?
Yeah. Some actually went in the ring
and he beat the shit.
Did
he beat the shit out of them?
Ah, bummer.
I know, evil wins yet again.
Someone should have gone who was like a full-on actual boxer. They should have hired someone just to be like, hey, Floyd, can you...
Right. But yeah, in 2006, his production company issued a press release stating that Boll would challenge his five harshest critics each to a 10-round boxing match.
Not just an exhibition 3-round. He wanted the full gamut.
Jesus.
He just was like, fuck
and
it.
And these are like movie critics, so he wanted like the twerpiest probably like...
He wanted it like a kickboxer. He wanted like the glass and...
Yeah.
Tong Po.
So yeah, Boll did win every match he was in.
Bummer.
And I think he did, he only wound up doing two, I believe.
He killed three of them, though.
Yeah. And disposed of their bodies, never to be found again. So a nice little interesting to show just how crazy Uwe Boll is.
Now, I haven't seen any of his other movies,
right.
But he was featured in Blubberella. So does he put himself in a lot
mean,
of his movies?
Who was he in Blubberella?
He's Hitler.
He's Hitler. Don't you hate him even more
that
now?
Whole scene is kind of
so
where
much.
I started checking out more than
yeah
I was like I don't think I even knew it was a dream at first, and then afterwards I was like, what the fuck, what was the point of the dream anyway?
Well, let's
there's
get into
so
it.
Many
let's,
different
let's get
should
into
we
Blubberella.
Just get into
yeah,
Blubberella
enough talking about
because we have
there's
I mean,
so much to talk about with Blubberella and
so
how terrible
so.
I mean, we need to like just hit it hard and get out as soon as possible because it's like we're gonna get a bad STD.
Okay, looks
from
like he's
movie.
Been in seven of his movies or seven movies.
So Blubberella came out in 2011 and it's basically a story about a obese half vampire, half human woman.
Which okay. is not established why
at
or
all.
How she is that.
No.
Right.
Correct?
And
unless I missed it.
She
no.
apparently lives in, you know, 1940.
And has a G3 mech.
Right.
And there's,
within minutes, she has full-on technology, internet, wireless,
I mean,
everything.
That's my notes.
No, and it's not even like they do it in like a tongue-in-cheek way where they're like, oh, they're not, you know, paying attention to the timeline. It just seems like...
Completely tongue-in-cheek in the worst kind of way.
Yeah, in a way that Pool Boy
oh, yeah.
was delightfully
in a way
tongue-in-cheek.
That even you two can't appreciate.
Right, like, I mean, the thing about Pool Boy is that it's set now, obviously. They didn't try anything ridiculous. Yeah, it's like, it's
well,
19...
Here...
You had the Chiron, 1940 Nazi Germany, and then
right,
you have her
right.
on a laptop, and it's like... I know you think that's funny,
yeah.
but that's not... That's
no,
the complete
no,
opposite of
no.
funny.
That's terrible.
Everything it's... about this movie is... Not funny in the slightest. I mean, this movie is
and it's put together so terribly. Like you don't nothing. One scene goes to the next where nothing is secular.
Oh,
like,
there was no script,
all.
Obviously.
No, I don't. Oh,
no.
There.
No, there couldn't
so?
Possibly. I mean,
so they just went into a scene and were like, "Just do this."
Yeah, they had to have. They
that's
had
ridiculous.
To have.
I mean, so much of that dialogue was like, "There's no way that was like." It felt
it was
like
horrible improvisation.
It was horrible improv.
Was
that's what it
yeah.
felt like. It felt like watching like a
yeah,
really
yeah.
bad
oh,
improv
yeah,
performance.
Like, sitting
yeah.
live,
like you suck. You suck.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Are they just
going to
fight each
teeth?
Other? Yeah, they're going to punch each other.
I'm just sorting meat for 5 minutes in a really unnecessary scene.
So,
my question before yes. we start is she supposed to be a person or a thing who travels through time? Is that what this
I don't
think is?
So.
No, I
thought
that's
she
was,
what like
I,
was
did
established
they make any,
that she
they
like
that?
She's like a vampire hunter who like
no, she's a half vampire.
She's half vampire.
But
she's
she
a
like,
Nazi hunter.
Oh, she's Nazi a Nazi hunter. Okay.
Which you can only kill in World War II.
Yeah, because they apparently that's it. That's her whole reason for living, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she's, you know, looking for love, and she's on some horribly anti-Semitic type of, like, you know, something about finding Jew love or something.
Yeah, she wants
oh, yeah,
because
she's on J date or something.
It's
yeah,
not J date, but it's, yeah, it's, yeah, it's like Jew date or something. Yeah. And so she's looking for love.
She wants a nice Jewish boy.
Yeah, all she wants is a nice Jewish boy. But yet all these fucking Nazis keep getting in her way, and she keeps having to kill them. And she meets some, like, resistance fighter.
I guess. Yeah.
It's a group of resistance fighters.
Some little man who, like, she's in love with.
One guy named Vag, who is a super
gay
guy.
Like,
the worst gay stereotype
ever.
Yeah.
He had maybe, like, two
yes,
funny parts.
He had
I
maybe
can't
the
really
two
recall,
funniest lines.
But, like, he had funny lines
oh, wait,
at some point.
I remember the one that made me laugh was, honey, there's no black people in this movie, so the whore's probably going to die first. You might as well get out of the light or something like that. that was like one of his only funny lines, I thought, in the whole movie. But
the whole black face for Precious?
There was, like, one instance in Precious, and then there was another. She, like, dreams in blackface. I think that was the joke.
Yeah.
But the Precious scene, what
which
was
is,
that?
Yeah. I mean, let's be fair. That is pretty hilarious.
Blackface? I mean, in recent weeks with Halloween and whatnot,
oh my
I
God.
Mean.
But it's just, like, why is she dreaming? Like, the dream about her mother has no bearing on the film whatsoever.
Nope.
I get the impression that when Uwe Boll tries to do comedy, to him what's funny is just, like, trying to be as horribly offensive as possible, and, like, not in any sort of a funny way, but to him it's hilarious. Really,
yeah,
because, I mean, Postal was the same exact way. Like, it was just one, like, you know,
gag.
One like, a Middle Easterner joke after another, and, you know.
As he
just
points to Nasli, like, oh,
yeah, you know, you appreciate it, Muhammad Jihad.
I mean, yeah, not, that was the one part of the movie I did enjoy.
Who do you think you are? You ain't no special vampire. You think you're special because you're the damn fifth? I'm the damn fifth. You ain't Precious. You're average. You an average-ass damn fifth. Precious! Are you listening to me, Precious?
Yes, Mama.
Your name ain't Precious.
No,
damn fifth, bitch.
Yes, Mama.
Guess what?
Yes, Mama.
When's my blood gonna be ready? I'm hungry.
When I'm done with it.
Excuse me?
I said when I'm done with it.
Oh, Precious got some lips. He does some shit. You think you're special because you had a baby? You think you're a grown-ass vampire? You just a baby giving it up for any werewolf on the street. You a dumbass damn fear bitch. Ain't you?
You're a dumbass.
What you say to me?
Nothing, Mama.
Put another egg in that shit. I want it nice and juicy. I want it dripping.
Yes, Mama.
Who's gonna clean that motherfucking mess up? I just got new linoleum. I know you just didn't leave that on the floor.
I'll get it, Mama. I'll get it when I want to get it.
You get it when you want to get it.
Yeah.
Is this your house? You think you're a grown-ass vampire because you don't have a dumb vampire baby? Just because you letting other vampires in that coochie pie? You ain't no grown-ass vampire. You're average. Are you listening to me? Are you listening to me, bitch? I guess I didn't hit you hard enough. Come get a snack, bitch. Come on. Get back here, bitch. How is you gonna cook this for me? There ain't blood left in it. Stupid damn fear, bitch!
You're stupid, Mama.
What'd you say to me? I will carve your ass like I done carved this punch meat! Stay still, bitch! Oh, no, bitch. No. No. Oh.
My snatch may be blown, Mama, but I'm strong. I'm strong.
You ain't strong.
I'm the damn fear, Mama. Do these change things?
Respect.
But would I really feel bad for is I feel really bad for all the actors that are in this movie that are also in Blood Rain 3. Like, Michael Pare and Clint Howard. It's like, you're like, hey, you know, you come in to audition for UA Bowl. I hope you don't have to. I hope he just calls you.
Yeah.
Say he calls you. And
oh, that's got to be the low point of your career, well, going like, in to audition for an UA Bowl movie.
Yeah, I imagine so. But, you know, okay, they get the movie. Pare's like, I'm signed on for Blood Rain 3. Sounds good. He gets that call, like, 2 days later. So, Michael, I'm thinking, while you're learning all of 90 pages of this script, can you just add another 30 to 40 for this other movie we're going to shoot concurrently? And you're probably not going to get paid for it additionally. But you've already signed on this movie, so do it,
yeah.
Please.
But he probably saw it and like, you know, if it's a big hit, you make three times money. You know,
now really I'm Czechoslovakian.
I really have to do the Germans thing before I launch in.
Seriously. German is a hard accent.
It is. It's not easy.
No one wants to speak German.
But
well, this
yeah,
movie
it
was
really
written
sad.
By the gay dude... co-written by the gay dude and the Blubberella chick.
Oh, really?
So, and those two really thought they were funny. Like, those two scream, or she at least, he just yeah. seems like a gay diva.
Yeah.
But she just screams like failed improv actress.
Oh, yeah,
like,
absolutely.
So unfunny.
And I looked up her credits, and I mean, aside from just being like the
she's done some TV and
Joe,
stuff, she looks
Joe.
Like... She's...
She plays a lot of dead bodies in shows.
Aww.
She plays...
Everyone just kills the fat chick.
She plays a lot of fat chicks and stuff.
Aww.
And then she's got some... It looks like some sort of web series. I mean, it's called Breaking Fat. Is that actually a TV series?
Looks like it.
No, I've never heard of it.
It says TV series, but... I'd venture to
what is it?
Guess that's actually...
YouTube
it's a short
comedy.
Oh, uh-huh. I guarantee you it's on the internet. So... Yeah, she's not riding the fat wave as well as some other fat actresses working today. So, but probably because she's not very talented,
right? You
but
have to
I will say
that her bad performance. Come on, I mean,
in a movie of horrible performances,
she was all right.
She doesn't. She seems like an Oscar winning actress.
She just fits in with the rest
of
their
people.
Shit.
So, all right. So basically, there's really no other story to this movie other than that there's this burgeoning love between her and the Brendan Fletcher resistance fighter character.
Is there, though?
Well,
it's so
supposedly
like, unusual.
They would lead you to believe that there is, but there's really oh, and then Clint Howard is like a Mangala, Dr. Mangala type for the Nazis. That's
yeah.
trying to make like a to make an army of vampires.
I don't even know what his
they never explain
is.
It
something about the Svetlana chick that he gets like
Svetlana
in yeah. this one. Although she plays Svetlana in Blood Rain 3, which leads me to believe that she's also in both and she's in both movies as well.
The following scene is really boring. This is the reason we present to you Jessica de Roy's music from Uwe Boll's movies. Have fun.
Drained you an hour ago. An hour, Gypsy. Yes, remarkable healing ability.
I feel different. Stronger.
Oh, imagine how powerful you'd feel if you were impervious to this. A simple test. You've inherited his immunity, however slight. If you were a regular vampire, the holy water would have crushed your hand like paper mache. But imagine if the holy water had absolutely no effect, or fire, or wooden stake. Imagine the possibilities. Your blood nourished the Commandant, helped him with his healing. A necessary exchange. We all must make sacrifices to benefit the Fuhrer. Times, they are a-changing, Gypsy. Why, just yesterday, I thought the Daywalker was a myth, a figment of scientific conjecture. But today, as they say, the world is our oyster. change is inevitable. Evolution, inevitable. The fatherland, inevitable.
Yeah, so, and he, like, says something while she's in the cage where it's like, you inherited his healing ability, which I don't even understand. What healing ability? I don't understand.
Here's the thing. I don't understand. Well, I don't understand anything about this movie. But, like, she's fighting at the beginning of the movie, or, like, she goes to hunt, like, a pack of Nazis.
Yeah, she goes to kill.
And then she runs into the Commandant. Does she make the Commandant into a vampire?
Yes.
How? By motorboating? Like, remember, she,
right,
like, just
she never
puts him,
bites
like,
him,
no,
right?
She never bites him. She just, like, smothers her.
Doesn't
smothers
something
him in
happen?
His chest.
She shoots her milk into his mouth, I think.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. Please, no. Don't let it be that.
I need to rewatch.
That's so disgusting.
Okay, I might be wrong about this, but when he falls to the ground, I think there's white
that
stuff
was
coming
such
from his
a
mouth.
Genuine, like, response from Nosley. That was, she so didn't want that to be what actually happened in the movie.
I really think that's what happened.
Gross.
Oh,
because
gross.
I can't tell for sure. Now that you're mentioning, like, I don't remember him biting her, but I do remember when he falls to the ground, he has, like, white stuff dribbling from his mouth.
Oh my god! Why?
I don't even
want
to.
Does she have a baby
it.
In her?
Ew, no.
No.
She just
wait,
eats
oh,
a lot of
oh,
cheese.
Oh, because you wouldn't buy that? She's not pregnant. She can't shoot milk. This movie's bullshit. Everything else, fine.
Couched in some sort of reality, oh, everything.
No, but there is that reference to her having had a baby at some point.
What?
Something about
well,
a
well, there's
the
that precious,
whole precious
flashback.
But then there's also later with the gay guy, and like she, like when they get those other resistance people that are looking through the.
Oh, yeah.
And she does something like, I want this one. And she like, would you be upset there's no baby in here? I'm like,
oh, because she's so fat.
Yeah.
That, yeah, that was the joke. The
joke.
Oh,
air quotes
we
joke.
Use that term loosely.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, see, I don't understand. And then, wait, there was, like, a marching scene, and then there was a guy dressed as a fish.
What was that?
And it happened, like, multiple times. There
what
was just
marching
a guy
scene?
Dressed as a fish.
They were
like
marching the resistance, like, or no, the people from the train that they rescued.
Yeah.
Marching them through the snow, and all of a sudden there's just, like, a dude in, like, a goldfish costume or something. That,
sure, it's some inside joke.
I figured it was supposed to be some sort of anti-Semitic thing, like it was, you know, salmon or something, because... Juicy, lots of locks, or
I think you're thinking way too far into
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he did not go that deep.
I think it's just like, hey, let's put the guy in the fish costume. Funny disco.
I wonder if they incorporate that into Blood Rain 3 somehow. That's a recycled fish costume that they reused. So Vag is the
sassy
gay
guy,
sassy
and
gay
he's
guy.
Sort of funny at some point.
She pulls out a cell phone in the middle of right after she meets, like they're in like the. Resistance place. She pulled out a cell phone. She's like, oh my god, mom. No, yeah, he's cute. And all this, like, dialogue. I was like, you know that right before they did that scene, they tossed her a plastic phone and they were like, do something funny with this.
Oh, I think 100% of stuff that's done in this movie is like, Uwe Boll on the spot going, oh, I think this would be funny. Do this.
Yeah.
Because it never is. And it leads me to believe there really couldn't possibly be that much thought put into it.
I do like that Michael Paré loses his accent. Like,
he turns into Marlon Brando. He right. like became Marlon Brando for a minute, then stopped, then became Marlon Brando right for a minute again, and then stopped.
I was trying
and
to
then
think
had like a German accent
to him
at one
getting
point
fat because he was like he had fed on Blubberella's blood, and it like was making him fatter.
Oh, it was.
I don't know. I thought it was just healing him.
No. By the end, remember he was like all like the last shots of him is him all fat. And he was back to Brando voice. As I was trying to think, like, oh, is he trying to do, like, fat Brando?
I thought
Brando?
They were just bored. And they just...
Yeah.
They probably were.
No.
He's like, oh, I'm just going to do a Brando voice
and then
now.
The scene... Okay, the Adolf Hitler scene. Okay.
Starring Uwe Boll.
Uwe Boll.
As Hitler.
And then
as Hitler.
The dude...
Shocking. That
the
he
other guy, Nathaniel
Hitler.
Guy, is
dream.
In blackface.
Yes.
Oh, right.
For no reason.
Well,
no
this
reason.
Was the dream. She again dreams in blackface.
She just dreams in blackface.
Did it kind of seem like it was a play on Robert Downey Jr.'s character in Tropic Thunder? It kind of felt
I think
like
he,
Uwe
that
Boll.
Was probably his inspiration. That was probably the dude. I don't even know if Uwe Boll probably has seen that movie.
It felt to me like he had just seen it like the night before in the hotel or something. He's like, we'll just put the guy in.
Well,
in,
I mean, the whole.
The Germans.
The whole movie starts out with chapter one as if this is supposed to be as like Inglourious Bastards.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
There's a few times where he's like, well, obviously Precious. There's a few times where he's like trying to make all these references, and you're like, what the fuck are you doing?
They're current at the time. They were funny, like, oh, yeah. Derp.
Or when you do a Lassie reference and they're not current
and
at all.
And you know what's good to know is that this movie ripped off El Ninja Picante.
That's right. It did.
Sure did. They did the risk joke, which we did.
Yeah.
Fucking I was assholes. Very pissed
I'm
off.
Not, I'm not proud that we have a joke that's was in ours that's also in
Wait,
in
what
this,
part?
But...
When El Pincha Shiza gets captured, John is interrogating him. And they do this whole joke where he's like, you know, like, what are you going to do now? And he's like, I'm going to invade Germany. And then, like, it pulls back and they're playing Risk. It's
oh,
the same exact joke.
Bastards.
It's the same exact joke.
Fucking assholes.
We thought of it first, though.
Yeah, we did. And probably did it much better. It
was funny. Without a doubt. So moving on. There was, Clint Howard.
Whoops. Sorry.
Here's the thing. Also, I keep saying here's the thing, like, there's anything about this movie at all. But, like... does he edit these movies too? Because the editing was just like so all over the place. There
Very
was
well
no
might.
Like, did they even have a storyboard? Like the scenes in her apartment where she would just go like there was seriously a scene for like 3 minutes of her just sorting meat in her freezer.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah, and those are the scenes that are like, there's no way this movie's just 80 minutes long.
And like the part where the Commandant's lackey that turns into a vampire,
right?
Like goes and sneaks up on the dude, like guarding the balcony or something.
Yeah, and
tapping
him on the shoulder,
and then like,
that was actually a little bit funny. That was actually kind of a tiny bit funny. I was like,
yourself,
oh, that's you know,
no,
it's
no.
At least it's something somewhat original.
No,
you sir are wrong.
Okay, I was trying to look for
you do not even get to have your own opinion on that. You're just wrong.
A bright spot.
I'm sorry. There was
Shannon Archibald. Wait, what?
Oh, edited the movie?
Hang on.
I knew I was in trouble when Clint
it
Howard...
It says editorial department. Shannon Archibald, post-production assistant.
Huh.
Also slash editor.
slash local EMT.
I wonder if that's how it's...
and craft services. It doesn't matter, you know why? Because
possible.
There was no editing to be done. They just slapped a bunch of shit together.
Absolutely.
I don't even know how we can, like... There is no plot that
go
we
on.
Can go
no.
on, or, like, any,
I mean,
like, chronological
I will say,
order that we can do this movie in.
When Clint Howard comes into the movie...
It's definitely nice.
I found myself going, oh, thank goodness, Clint Howard's going to save this movie.
You
and
never
I,
thought.
And then I thought about what I had just said to myself afterwards. I was like, I can't believe I just... said to myself, oh, thank God, Clint Howard might save this movie. That's how you know you're watching a fucking awful movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
It, so yeah, there's, I mean, there's...
I gotta give him credit, though. He really just, he comes in. He comes in, gives you some good lines.
He didn't phone it in.
No, he did not. He came to
you
play.
You don't have to worry about that from Clint Howard. He's never gonna phone it in.
No, he's...
He'll come and give you a very passionate, horrible performance.
All heart, all
But I didn't even really... He just came in at such random moments. I mean, this whole movie is all random moments, but, like, I'd never really understood what he was doing in the scene.
No. It's
he didn't either.
Whatever he was doing, though, he did it well.
Yeah, so there, there's... can we talk about the German tampon scene?
The German tampon.
Oh, come on. The two rolling pins?
Oh, gosh!
Oh, yeah.
That whole scene, what was that?
It made no sense. Like, I was like,
she just
wait,
came
does she
into
work
like a
there?
Sex
does she
dinner?
Live there?
Yeah,
is she just visiting there? Like, I had no idea. It was
all
completely
unknown. Because she's apparently bisexual as well.
As if they were tampons.
No, they
it's
called
just a
it.
Joke.
They called
the
it
sex
German
move.
Tampon.
Oh, I thought they just were, they were massaging her with him, and then they stuck him up her ass for erotic... Nature.
No, that was Uwe Boll's attempt at humor. He figured they would call two rolling pins up your vagina the German tampon.
That's
or maybe one.
I mean,
up
we
your
all
butt
know they can only fit
one. I
don't
even want
one
know.
Rolling pin up a German's ass. I mean, two.
I mean,
that's just not funny. One funny.
In the movie's defense, Blubberella probably could take two rolling pins up her vagina.
Stop! I don't need that right now.
No? Okay, no. Fair enough.
Maybe later. Maybe
when I'm alone.
Yeah, there was just like, and all the gags, there was, you know, bad sound effects they would just drop in.
Right.
Like, you know, that always makes something funnier.
I mean, they just chopped so much from like, Blood Rain. You can watch the trailer of Blood Rain. And like, you're like, are you serious? Really, this is happening? Fucker.
I actually found, like, I don't usually do this on my notes on a movie that we watch, but I found myself, like, actually doing a bullet point of, like, that... that captured my feeling at the time. So I have like a third of the way through, I had like, I hate my life right now.
Yeah, totally.
And then there was a few holy fucking shits in there. And then by the like 2/3 of the way through, I wrote something like, what the fuck is this intervention scene? This movie makes no fucking sense. Someone please kill me.
Yeah, this movie goes nowhere and does nothing.
Yeah. It took 4 people to write this movie, !
Well, now it makes
sense.
What
the fuck is going on in this movie?
At least it makes sense because I had a note, and now Adolf Hitler, he's 40 minutes in, and I said, at least he's speaking German. And now it makes sense. Uwe Boll didn't have to, he'd have to hire anyone to speak German. He's like, can you speak German? No. Can you? No. Fuck it. I got this.
Yeah. It's the role I was meant to play.
I'm sure that's exactly what he thought of.
Yeah,
it
was his dream.
And
then who killed Clint Howard? It was just some random chick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was
just like out of nowhere.
I know, I wrote such an anticlimactic end for Clint Howard.
How does he die?
He just gets shot by some chick with like a sniper rifle or something.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. He's just like standing there.
That's rule number one of movies. You don't kill Clint Howard.
No, absolutely. So I don't know. Is there anything else?
I don't want to talk about this movie anymore.
I mean,
it's terrible. No one should watch it at all. No one should support Uwe Boll at all.
Yeah.
Like, I think that guy just needs to
stop.
Stop.
Just stop. Yes. Life.
There's a lot of people who can use that money to make movies. And
the problem is he won't. He like feeds on everyone's hatred for his movies.
Ugh.
Like it like, only like, makes him stronger.
He's like
or
a Sith. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not fair.
It's the whole like I'd rather be infamous than like not famous at
right,
all.
Right.
What a
oh,
douche.
Fuck. All right,
fuck you, Uwe Boll. Fuck you, Uwe Boll.
So that is Blubberella, available on streaming Netflix, if you so choose to torture yourself with watching that.
Yeah.
By all means.
Discuss.
Yeah, well, we skipped over from earlier, but we can briefly touch on Morningstar, the trailer for the newest Uwe Boll movie that he only produced. Didn't have much else involvement with it, but...
looks okay.
Yeah, I mean,
looks like a Game of Thrones there and said Game of Thrones kind
of
like
if the Game
in.
Of Thrones were like LARPers, because it basically just looked like a LARPer scene. Like people just met up in like a meadow and decided to dress up and fight.
So there's not even a premise on IMDb for it? Well, that's not a good sign.
Dudes fight someday.
It was like a wit. There's some witch.
It was very hard to determine from that trailer what this movie was about.
Yeah, because it was just a bunch of fighting and like witch sex and an old scary witch.
There was some witch sex, which, you know what? I've watched, you know, I'm okay with
that. Ain't
nothing
wrong with some witch sex.
Witch sex, vampire sex. I'm kind of, you know, whatever.
I can dig it.
You know, I'm fine with that. There's worse.
Yeah, it just seemed like very generic-y Game of Thrones-esque type shit, and it, I don't even know if it's supposed to be a foreign film. I know the website we found the trailer
on. It was like
on,
an Italian
was an
thing.
Italian
oh, yeah,
because
the directors are Italian, or the people who made it other than Uwe Boll.
And like Aaron and I said before the podcast, he's just obviously, you know, focusing and honing in on the streaming type and the smaller distribution deals, for which must be much more lucrative for him
in
the long run, because he knows his budgets are much smaller. So he's like, well...
I can work with this.
Yeah.
And it is working for the Asylum very well. And if anybody from the Asylum is listening, whatever you do, do not hire Uwe Boll on any of your movies.
You guys
you
are great
you
as you
to.
Are.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't
stay
break
classy.
It.
Stay classy.
Yeah, right. Keep churning those out.
But we do have quite a few Uwe Boll projects to look forward to in the near future, sadly.
By look forward to, you mean don't watch ever, you know.
Yeah, I can't even talk.
Blurb, blurb, blurb.
So coming out in the near future for Uwe Boll is something called Prisoners of the Sun, Morningstar, which both of those are completed. Seed 2, I never saw Seed 1.
I think you'll be able to follow Seed 2 without seeing Seed 1.
Let's see. Prisoners of the Sun, a multinational expedition discovers a lost city beneath a pyramid where they must stop the reawakened gods of ancient Egypt from initiating the apocalypse.
Now they're
okay,
gonna
I'll read Luna Project then.
Oh, yeah.
The year is 2079. After World War, USA is weakened, and Sweden is the first nation to have a permanent base on the moon.
Nice.
However, the scientists soon find a mysterious ice wall, and behind it is the answer if we are alone in the universe. Well, obviously...
I'm actually kind of on board for that one. But I like movies about what's it called... moon bases or colonizing the moon. That to me is kind of an interesting world, but and again,
you watch that, I'll watch the Egypt one. And
okay,
we'll call it a
then
draw.
We'll discuss.
Yeah,
and Uwe Boll is just producing that one as well. He is not writing or directing that one. It's written by some Swedish guys. Go figure.
Maybe he'll be like a Shyamalan, where like he'll just stop directing and then just kind of fade away into producing.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, but no. Shyamalan.
Don't hold
feel
your
like
breath for that one.
Shyamalan should have a resurgence.
You could be right. I mean, In the Name of the King 3 is the last film he directed. So
yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he's just raking in the dough, just letting other people make movies.
Now he's reached the point where he doesn't have to do
he's
the work.
He's reached his creative pinnacle, and he just feels
he just needs
to produce now.
That kind of genius just, you know, it's hard to sit down every day and have that kind of genius.
Oh, yeah.
It's
got to be taxing. It's got to be exhausting. And, I mean, your
like
brain just always running constantly. Yeah. And poor guy.
Poor, it's hard to be him.
All right, there's nothing really else to say about Morningstar. Let's go ahead and give the Wheel of Misfortune a spin and see what we're going to be watching for next time, shall we?
It's not going to be a Uwe Boll movie, I'm just saying that.
Yes, no.
We took those off the wheel. Those have been removed
from the wheel. Never again. All right.
What could it be?
Please let it be something watchable. Please let it be something watchable.
Something good.
What is it?
Oh!
Yeah. All right, this is actually, I think, pretty promising, based on having seen this movie before, that after coming off the heels of Blubberella, being able to watch Escape from L.A., which is our next movie,
yay!
Yes,
will be a much more enjoyable experience. So, with that said, I think that's going to wrap things up here. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time for our review of Escape from L.A. I'm Aaron Vaccaro.
I'm Jeff Tafaro.
I'm Nosley, and I hate Uwe Boll.
Thanks, guys.